Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Tech Lounge. I hope you are all sitting comfortably, because today's interview is a good one. This interview formed the basis of an article I published on the Next Web a few months ago with Mike McQuaid, maintainer of Homebrew and now one of the co-founders of Workbrew. A lot of people who use macOS will have heard of Homebrew, and the article was very popular. So I am looking forward to seeing what people think of this interview too. So let's just jump right in. Before we begin, there's just a few people at the door with some things to say that won't take very long. If you'd rather not hear these interruptions, then please support the show. You can find details in the episode and show notes. So, Mike, how are you today?
Yeah, doing great, thanks. How are you, Chris?
Good. I can see a guitar amp behind you. This is exciting too.
It's a bass guitar amp. I have a few guitars hiding behind me, unfortunately.
Mine are out of shot. I actually am mostly a drummer. I have an electric drum kit like just there.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. I mean, mine are sadly mostly for show nowadays. Since I had kids, I had visions of my kids being virtuosic musicians at a young age, and they have no interest in learning music so far.
My dad tried to do the same because my dad was a professional, and I didn't get interested until I was a teenager and realized there were benefits to playing music, shall we say, as a young teen. So I found my own motivation. So you represent two organizations, one organization, one company, both with a similar ending, Homebrew and Workbrew. I think we should, let's begin with Homebrew. And let's, for those, I mean, in certain sectors it's very well known, but for those who don't know what it is, what is it? And I think a more important question might be, why is it as well?
Sure. So I guess my highest level description of Homebrew tends to be for people who aren't even in tech and have no idea really about computers, is it's, I first ask them, have you heard of open source software?
Yep.
And if they haven't, I tend to give up. But assuming you have heard of open source software, which I imagine is most of the listeners to this, then Homebrew is basically an app store for open source software. So it's a way for primarily developers, but a bunch of other people to install open source software primarily on their Macs.
Yep.
But it also supports Linux now. It also installs a bunch of non-open source now.
Yep.
And yeah, but that's the simplest one-liner, I think.
Yeah. I mean, for any Linux people listening, it's a package manager as well, sort of, I suppose.
Yep.
But yeah, you are, like, I used it for a very long time, and I would say it's probably about 50-50 at this point that I'm also using it for the non-open, just because of the convenience.
Yep.
Just to have everything in one place as much as possible is kind of nice, because that doesn't really exist on Mac. It may surprise some people to hear this, but it's not really a thing. And it's, you were not the original maintainer or creator, were you, I think, from memory?
No.
Yep.
So the original creator was a guy called Max Howell.
Yep.
So he created it, I guess, 15 years ago, last May. And I sort of knew of Max. He was a friend of a friend. We both worked at startups in London. Mm. He was at Last FM, which if you were in tech in that particular era,
scrobbling,
lots of scrobbling. I was in a sort of similar startup in London called Mendeley. And and basically he used some other package managers on Macs and he didn't like them.
Yep.
And he came up with Homebrew, and I found Homebrew fairly early on. I think I got involved, you know, probably less than 6 months after it was created. Started contributing, no real expectations of doing anything, and then now have been maintaining it for 15 years and contributed to the package manager itself at least probably more than anyone else. And
you've been maintaining it for 15 years.
So
the project is older than 15 years.
So the project is 15 years. Sorry. I go by calendar years and things. Okay, so the project turned 15 a couple of months ago.
Okay.
And this is my 15th year. I guess my official 15 year anniversary would be like September or something.
Yeah. Which is relatively,
relatively old, long, and mature in terms of sort of modern open source.
Guess so.
Yeah. And I, actually, on a side thing, I feel like didn't Max Dingo want to do CocoaPods? Or have I got that mixed up? Which is like
so he worked. Later, he went and joined Apple at a later point in his career, and he worked on the Swift package manager, which was,
so
I don't really know that ecosystem super well, but I think that was sort of a somewhat related version of, like the official version of CocoaPods or something, but just for Swift.
And when did the Linux version begin?
Yeah, so that's, I can't remember the exact years off the top of my head, but there was a guy called Sean Jackman, I think, who started it originally. He started like a fork of Homebrew, basically, because he worked in bioinformatics. And the problem they had was they had these big, you know, supercomputers that they were allowed to compile software on, but they didn't get root. So they couldn't use the system package manager. And he figured out like, oh yeah, if I sort of like hack Homebrew this way and that way, then I can use it to install some stuff in my home directory. And yeah, and basically like over time, we sort of like built up relations with them. And then eventually the package managers merged and then the package repositories merged as well. So now Homebrew like officially supports Mac and Linux.
Okay, so it's the same. Okay, I have to be careful here. So for people who don't know, with Homebrew, most things are called a formula. So you have the same formulas for all.
Yes.
Combinations these days.
So the same formula is used to install stuff on Mac and Linux. I mean, there's some formula that only work on Linux and some formula that only work on Macs, but generally most of them work on both.
And I know there have also been various decisions along the way in with regards to the open, the non-open, the compiled, the non-compiled. Tell me a little bit of that journey. And I feel like there's been most recently this journey to reconsolidate as much as... Let's tell me the journey anyway.
Sure. So Homebrew started off as what we would call like a from source package manager, which basically meant that if you've used in the Linux world, I guess something like Gentoo, although I think even that's lesser nowadays, but certainly... So it would download the source code of the package and then it would fire up a compiler and churn away and then spit out in the end some... binaries, you call them, on your machine. And it's while it started off like that was a very time consuming for users because some, you know, software would take minutes to install, some software would take hours to install. And B, for us as maintainers, it was very error prone because there are a lot more things that can go wrong with compilation than not. So I remember Max initially kind of mentioned to me like, hey, you know, maybe worth playing around with this. And I created, so Homebrew has a beer theme overall, maybe clue from the name. So I created what I called bottles. Bottles are poured onto your system. And and basically like that started off just being a few of the most expensive packages to build, being built on my machine, then evolved to a VM. And then we did a Kickstarter and whatever it was, 2012 or 14 or something like that, to get some of our own hardware. And then over time, eventually, we were building more and more things and then decided to kind of build basically everything on all our supported operating systems. And we sort of flipped sort of gradually from a from source package manager to a binary package manager. So you now, if you write brew install, whatever, you will download our pre-built version of whatever the open source software is. And that will be installed on your machine. And that saves you time. It saves the world probably some energy use or greenhouse emissions or whatever you want to say. And it's also like way easier to support because stuff can still go wrong, but like the amount of stuff that goes wrong is dramatically reduced in that environment. And I guess the second part of your question, so again, similarly, I can't remember the years with this. There was another, not really fork of Homebrew, but almost like a sort of companion project to Homebrew called Homebrew Cask. So Homebrew Cask saw what Homebrew was doing to install open source software. And they thought, hey, like, wouldn't it be nice to have something a bit like this that I could use to install, I don't know, Google Chrome, 1Password, whatever, right? So instead of downloading open source software and then either in the old days building on your machine or nowadays building it on our servers and then distributing that, you just download with Homebrew Cask the pre-compiled binaries from, say, Google or 1Password or whomever. And then those are installed. And then I think, again, maybe 2016, something around those eras, the two projects merged. It was mainly the work of a Google Summer of Code student called Anastasia. And she worked really hard to get that done. And and then nowadays, if you write brew install, then it behaves pretty similar. Like most of the time, identically for packages, sorry, for formula, which are the things that are built from source, and for casks, which are these, what we call these kind of binary packages.
Yep. It's actually interesting. Well, my other series of interviews at the moment this week is around immutable operating systems. And you can kind of fake it a little bit with Homebrew, and you have this bundle thing as well.
Yep.
Of course, the Mac isn't really designed like this, though, and bundle we so far. And maybe it doesn't work completely because most of the application developers are not expecting you to do this. So, but it's... it's interesting you can kind of basically end up with a bit of a kind of a config file of your applications. And there are other projects that sort of relate, but they're not quite as well maintained as Homebrew, or not as big, I suppose, for preferences and Mac App Store and stuff like that. But, you know, it's probably a very small group of Mac users who really actually want to do this.
So to dig a little deeper, in case you are someone who that's piqued your interest, there's a Homebrew project called Homebrew Bundle, or if you like, Brew Bundle. So that pulls things from a brew file, which looks a little bit like a gem file if you've ever written any Ruby or, you know, Python requirements.txt or npm like package.json. And that basically says, here are the packages I want to install from Homebrew, Homebrew Cask, or as you said, mentioned the Mac App Store, or I think the other thing is like VS Code extensions.
Basically, I didn't know that.
pull those down and install them. So that's a nice way of like having one file for either everything on your machine.
Yeah.
So like, you know, setting up a new machine is dramatically quicker that way. Or alternatively, like you can also use it on like a project by project basis where you say this project needs, because again, a common thing in software projects is you might have in the README, okay, before you run gem install or whatever, bundle install, you have to install Postgres and Redis and whatever your dependencies are. So this provides a nice way of doing that programmatically. And then you can like test that in CI and all this type of thing. And you mentioned before about the immutability. And when we talk a little bit about Workbrew later on, like people, if they're interested in that, they should watch this space, because this is something that I'm actively...
It's good I'm talking to you. I wasn't necessarily going to talk to you on that side, but we can mix it up a bit. So. And just you mentioned Ruby files. Obviously, if you consider the time when Homebrew started, Ruby was, I don't really want to get into the department of saying more or less popular, but it was maybe more commonly chosen as an option. And it's perfectly reasonable for what it does in Homebrew. But has there been any thought about changing that at some point? Because, you know, programmers like to go with the new shiny, and a lot of them don't think Ruby is the new shiny. So,
Well, so from a personal basis, I personally still love Ruby. Yeah. And again, stuff at Workbrew that we'll talk about later, like all of our web application stack is built in Ruby on Rails, because I still think that's the one of the best ways of kind of getting started with a web application nowadays. There's always regular conversation about, should Homebrew be moved to another language? But the problem is the kind of formula that I mentioned before and casks. So we would call them like a DSL, which stands for domain specific language. So it's basically like, if you go and look at a formula file, if you say have, you know, used a Linux package manager before, you could probably look at that and without anyone explaining to you what's going on, have a reasonable understanding through a combination of the DSL being quite good and Ruby itself being quite expressive. You could look at that and be like, okay, I understand what's going on here. Yeah. It's downloading this from this place. It depends on this. It's then going to run these instructions, et cetera, et cetera. So the tricky thing with Homebrew is if you want it to move to another language, then that Ruby-based DSL is... essentially supporting that in another language means supporting Ruby. So you're going to have some Ruby somewhere to shell out there, or you're going to have to do a Homebrew, you know, Homebrew's higher than V2 at this point, but like a massive breaking change version of Homebrew where you break everything that exists already and move to like a new way of doing things. And in my experience, when you do that in an open source project, more times than not, you kill the project.
It's because not worth
people
it,
just probably. Don't want to migrate, make a fork. Would we choose Ruby if we were building Homebrew from scratch today? Probably not. Is it going to migrate away from Ruby? Also probably not. And there's, we do more and more. The main problem with Ruby is just performance. And that's not a Ruby problem per se. It's more like how we use it, and the competitors of like Swift and Go and whatever for CLI applications are just faster because they don't have to boot up a VM. So essentially we're just trying to make Homebrew faster instead of trying to rewrite it in another language that could potentially be faster.
And there is a tremendous amount of tooling. That's the thing. Behind the scenes, most people will just encounter one bit, but if you ever contribute and things like that, there's a lot of other tools that are all part of this ecosystem as well, I guess. So, And on that, before we kind of, I think this is a bridge question into WorkBrew. The project, I think, I don't know about anymore, but certainly at periods of time was one of the biggest open source projects, however you measure that, out there. And so, firstly, what is that like? I know there have been challenges here, there, and everywhere throughout the project history. But yeah, what is that like? And this very much leads into WorkBrew in a second, but what is that like?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice in some ways. Yeah. It's funny, I had opportune timing because I work from home in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and over here, like, tech's not nearly as big as it is in the US and stuff. But I had a young lad come up to me in the gym today and be like, oh, are you the homebrew guy? And he was like, oh, I can't believe like a tech celebrity goes to my gym, which me being Scottish makes me like cringe unbearably. Someone to flatter me in public like that. But yeah, so it's very, that part of it is strange, but nice, frankly. Like it's nice when I work on homebrew to know that like lots of people use this and that me spending my time on this stuff has a positive impact on other people, and people seem to generally feel favorably to it and enjoy using it and have good experiences. So yeah, that feels great. And I still enjoy it, which is nice. I guess the flip / slightly darker side to that is, you know, like being a large project, you get a lot of hate from people, like either people who are just frustrated because they hit a bug or because you changed something and they didn't read the release notes and now something at their work's broken, or just people who are, frankly, there's a lot of entitled noisy whiners in open source who contribute very little and like to shout at people, make them feel bad. And one of my problems / strengths is I have very little time for those people, and I just insta block them or like lock their issues, close their issues. I won't go on my way to spend my time fixing problems that are, you know, the people who are asking them or asking them in a, you know, borderline abusive way. And I'm also super protective of my maintainers and I don't want them to be treated that way either. So I guess that's the flip side of it. But, you know, I guess I talked in another podcast recently about like open source and mental health.
Exactly. And FOSDEM this year as well, I think you had a talk.
You know, this stuff comes up. And I think for me, like I would say I've never been burned out in the 15 years that I've worked on homebrew. I've probably not had more than, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks at most where I've not worked on homebrew in that time. And that's not because I feel compelled to. It's because I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
And I still enjoy working on it. And I still value the people who use it and maintain it and stuff like that. And
Now, so this brings us to an interesting point. I may have been naive here because when I saw the WorkBrew kind of announcements over the past sort of 6 to 12 months, and then I noticed, I think before that you were working at GitHub, I think.
So I spent a decade at GitHub.
And this actually surprised me. So this is kind of, you know, a project of homebrew size. And there are contributions and things. You've already mentioned a lot of infrastructure costs, and I imagine they are pretty high. I was actually surprised, and maybe I'm naive here, to see that that was the case, that you were working somewhere all that time, that there wasn't enough in the bank to pay one person, which took me by surprise. And it's somewhat damning of, I think, the nature of something like homebrew as well, because it's largely a consumer open source project, not like something you can build a startup on, you know, traditionally.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like there's pros and cons in some ways of that. So yeah, I guess it's funny because, again, when I was at GitHub, the assumption most people have is that my primary job there was working at homebrew. And that was literally never the case. Like at most I spent, I think on maybe two occasions in 10 years, I spent 2 to 3 months where my primary project was something where GitHub needed homebrew to do something, homebrew needed something. Yep. So I was like, okay, cool. Can I spend some time on this? But most of the time that wasn't the case. Yeah. And I just did it in my, I guess, you know, I did some of it during working hours, but you know, when you work from home for an American company, like what is a working hour or not a working hour? You know, it's a little bit, a bit nebulous, right? And I think GitHub benefited from stuff I learned on homebrew benefited from stuff I had on GitHub, and GitHub were very heavy users of Homebrew, and GitHub, you know, paid my salary and also pay a lot of those expensive infrastructure costs that you mentioned are borne by GitHub. I guess maybe I'm an older generation of open source kind of guy, but like personally, I don't see it as necessarily like a bad thing that the project didn't have enough money to pay me to work on it full time, because I'm actually not sure I would have wanted that
either.
We're in the interesting middle ground as a project where we have essentially, I guess the way I frame it is like too much for stickers, not enough for a salary, right? we could pay someone a salary, but we couldn't look and say, okay, well, we can definitely pay someone a market rate-ish salary for like years at a time without there being potential difficulties in that.
So explain, I think, again, probably the same question we began with, what is WorkBrew and why is WorkBrew, and why now, I think, is maybe another question to add to that.
Yeah. So WorkBrew is essentially, we're building a commercial company on top of Homebrew. So a pattern I'd seen again and again over the years working on Homebrew is that you get bigger organizations with more compliance requirements, particularly, who may have requirements to use stuff like MDM tools. They might have requirements that their users don't have admin access. They might have requirements around vulnerability mitigations or like SLAs or security reviews and things like that. And these were just things that Homebrew either couldn't do, or the Homebrew maintainers who were volunteers didn't have really any interest in doing.
Yeah.
So it always seemed to me like there was a little bit of a commercial opportunity there. And the time felt right for me and my co-founders, formerly of GitHub, to kind of enter this space and say, okay, well, the project's in a good place in terms of having like a decent governance structure and stability and good community goodwill. And we're in a decent place in terms of like, it seems like a ripe kind of time to kind of try and go into this space and try and make Homebrew better in this way for kind of enterprise customers. So yeah, so that's sort of where it aligned. And what WorkBrew looks like today, we're in private beta. Mm-hmm. We're going to go into public beta very shortly. And basically right now we're a like fleet management tool essentially for Homebrew that kind of glues into your MDM tool. So you can run any Homebrew command and configure Homebrew on across all of the machines in your fleet in the same way, basically. And we have a slightly security enhanced version of Homebrew where we're running things as a different user in like a different sandbox and stuff like that. But for the end user, it essentially feels exactly the same as using Homebrew normally, where you still run brew commands in a terminal and you get things working the same way.
It's an interesting idea because, macOS sort of has a handful of these somewhat... there's a couple of the commercial MDM tools. I have used some of them, being employed by also American companies at a distance in the past. And also, I've also worked at companies that had like a weird assemblage of like Puppet scripts and things to do something similar. But there's always, it's macOS, and Apple have periodically had their own solutions with profiles and things which kind of come and go in terms of their enthusiasm for them. But there's never really been anything that cohesive that you would get on Windows. And it's actually interesting that you know, I would say a lot of developer-focused companies, it's highly likely that the engineers on Mac are using Homebrew anyway. So it's an interesting play.
Well, and there's an interesting other place where the almost like the cart and the horse being flipped here, where there are some companies where due to their compliance requirements, they can't have developers using Macs, right? Yeah. And they've contacted us saying like, hey, we have all these developers who want to use Macs. Our compliance requirements mean like ISO 27001 or whatever, that they have to have software be approved before it can be installed on their machines and stuff like that. And that means that they can't use Homebrew. Like, does WorkBrew have a solution to that? And we're able to say, yeah, we do have a solution to that. So the interesting thing that I didn't really think about when I was getting into this is it's not just upping the security profile for the people who are using Homebrew in these bigger companies, but also enabling more people to use Homebrew who want to and maybe use it at home on their hobby projects, but aren't able to use it at work yet.
Yeah. Just on the subject of the MDMs, like a lot of the ones I've used tend to have their own kind of app store that you install from. So have you found integrating with those? Like, are they open to integration, or are you kind of almost seen as like a competitor to their own internal tools?
No, I don't think we're competing with those MDM tools. So they're like in their app stores are, I mean, I can't speak for all of them, but the ones we've been in contact with seem to be happy with us kind of working to integrate with them. And it feels like it's win-win there because we're kind of solving different problems in some ways. Like, you know, there's some overlap. You could obviously use Homebrew to install some of your software there, but generally the way people are using MDM tools, they're leaning on their MDM tool to do more of this stuff and Homebrew to do less of this stuff. But there's some kind of nice blurred lines there and they'll allow us to kind of be value add where you can use us and an MDM tool and kind of get more value out of using both than you would out of just using us separately.
Yeah. And you kind of hinted at it, but this like immutability idea, I think that relates to the rollout, I guess, you know, something comes pre-installed that on boot runs through a bunch of brew scripts to install and set up.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. So right now we're primarily focused on building something for kind of security and IT professionals where essentially I worked on internal and external developer tools almost my entire time at GitHub, and I've worked on Homebrew obviously for a while. So I have like a very high bar for myself and my company and everything like that for developer experience. So for me, like using Homebrew should feel just as good, if not better, when you're using it under Workbrew as when you're using it without Workbrew.
Yeah.
So like that essentially for developers, the experience should be the same. And then we're building something where for security and IT professionals, it's like dramatically better because Homebrew does not play nicely with these MDM tools out of the box, and Workbrew does. And we have very decent integration. But yeah, over time, we're building more and more in the kind of developer space as well. So we don't have anything kind of ready for announcement or release yet there, but we definitely, I worked on some of these problems at GitHub, and like a common complaint that people have with Homebrew, for example, is because it's what you call a rolling release package manager, which essentially means Homebrew will always try and be on the latest version of everything. That is not compatible with how most companies work. Most companies want to have everyone on the team be at least, you know, even if they're very upgrade happy, they want to be able to say, okay, well, let's upgrade everything for everyone on the team at the same time. And Homebrew with brew files doesn't really let you do that yet. And that's on the Workbrew side, like that's probably our biggest developer centric problem that we're solving is we don't have anything ready for that now, but like the problem that we are aware is there and that we have some early plans working on that is to essentially build something where you're able to kind of lock things down in that way so that you are able to protect versions like that.
Interesting on that, because I noticed you list as on a feature list, like the console, and you mentioned the kind of security and auditing, that kind of thing. Does this go as far, because I don't think core Homebrew has this concept either, but introducing things like, you know, CVEs and vulnerabilities detected in packages, and that will also be a feature in Homebrew?
Yes. So that's a feature we're building in Workbrew. So you're right to say that there are some sources out there that provide, if you go looking, you can figure out kind of what CVEs are in what Homebrew packages, but there's an awful lot of false positives and false negatives in there. And one of the advantages we have at Workbrew is we're building this in a way that, because we have Homebrew maintainers, for example, who work for us, that people can really benefit and the community will be able to benefit from essentially us using this information. But then our customers have a flow to be able to say, okay, this thing is right now outdated and very shortly, if you have a CVE, and then you can press literally one button to update that package over your entire fleet of devices and monitor which devices are on which versions and stuff like that. So not that in any way I would will us another Heartbleed or other like horrible vulnerabilities where people have to upgrade everything at once, but we will inevitably get to another one of those cases. And my experience has been in the past, that's when poor Mac admins who themselves may not even use Homebrew are put in a situation where they have to like hack together some script like yesterday to upgrade all their devices. Yeah. And then they find Homebrew doesn't want to play nicely with their MDM provider and whatever. And instead Workbrew, in those situations for our Workbrew customers, it's like, okay, well, you go into the console, you click one button, and then in 15 minutes, assuming the devices are on, they'll be updated to the latest version. So it makes people's lives a lot easier in those situations.
Yeah. I'm interested to know how that kind of relationship works, because Homebrew has generally been a user initializes, whereas in this case, you kind of have to have some sort of agent saying, hey, initialize. You know, so it's a different dynamic as well.
Yeah.
And are you planning a Linux version? Does it not make sense for Workbrew?
No, I mean, we have our eyes and ears open with this stuff. I mean, as you would expect for a kind of relatively early stage startup, we have lots of plans, but then the plans are very heavily influenced by what our customers are interested in. We're going to have, we definitely have some customers who are interested in us having more support in Linux, and we have essentially internally, most of the stuff is already working for Linux, but we just haven't packaged it up nicely and made it an official kind of thing that we claim to support. We're definitely seeing most of the demand is on the Mac side right now, on Linux and, you know, who knows, maybe even one day on Windows, then we have the potential to kind of support more of these things.
One day Homebrew and Chocolatey will merge. That would be cool.
Who knows? Stranger things have happened.
If you don't mind me asking, like, what has been the less tech side of things? Did you receive funding? Was it bootstrapped? How's that side of things going?
Yeah, so we're not ready to kind of announce things fully on that side. But basically, yeah, we're just building building the company how we kind of think is best at the moment. If you're the type of person who goes digging on the internet, you can probably find out more than I'm telling you now. But for now, we will announce more in future.
Yep.
But for now, we're sort of keeping that stuff.
And I feel like some people might ask as well, because, you know, this sort of relationship you've had, as you mentioned earlier, is a more old school open source journey where you worked on something for a long time for the main motivation to make something good. And then later kind of thought, maybe I can monetize this. Whereas a lot of modern startups kind of look the other way with open source.
Yep.
So the other question would be, do you anticipate, and maybe it's too early to say, anything from Workbrew actually rolling back into Homebrew?
Oh, I mean, already there's been many things actually that have gone into Homebrew. So when you use Workbrew and you run Brew install on your machine, you're not running a fork of Homebrew. You're running Homebrew itself.
Okay, cool.
There's a certain amount of functionality that is just necessary that it goes into Homebrew. But the nice way, I mean, as you said, like I have been involved with open source for a while. I maybe have a little bit more of an old school ethos, but one of our biggest principles as a company, and this comes from my CEO, John Britton, who says this all the time, and I couldn't agree more, is not to give away things today that you're going to have to take back tomorrow, right? So there's parts of Workbrew that in future that today you have to pay, and in future might be free or open source or whatever, who knows? But right now we're making sure that the stuff we do is like tightly separated. And again, similarly, like everything in Homebrew is open source, right? And Homebrew will be an open source, probably primarily volunteer run, community run project forever. Mm-hmm. And Workbrew will probably be a for-profit commercial enterprise forever.
And, at least it's nice and clear, I suppose.
Yeah, and the separation there. Because I mean, like without naming two specific names, obviously we've seen a lot of churn in the last few years of various companies who made licensing decisions 5 or 10 years ago, which have now changed quite dramatically and had generated quite a lot of community backlash. Yeah. And, you know, I'm very sensitive to that. And I am a little bit of a open source purist in that I still consider, you know, the open source initiative's definition of open source to be what open source means. Okay. And if you don't comply with them, then you can be another thing, but I think you're probably not open source.
Yep.
And if you go looking, again, sniffing around Workbrew stuff, you'll see that we've generated a lot of open source contributions to Homebrew, but we, as a product ourselves, are not open source.
Yep.
And for me, that, you know, there's pros and cons of doing things different ways, but I think that we're doing things in a way I feel that is most respectful to the community and most respectful to the maintainers of Homebrew and the people who've got it to where it is today, where we say we have these separate entities and Workbrew and Homebrew are very good friends, but right now at least they are separate entities and
they live in different houses.
They live in different houses. And I'm the CTO and co-founder of Workbrew and I'm the project leader of Homebrew. Yeah. So like that helps to avoid the falling out between those two things. But even then, like me being a project leader on Homebrew, that's an elected position. I stand for an election every year and get elected by the maintainers and other kind of wider scale community people. So yeah, I think there's a nice separation there. And it's funny, even the people who kind of are Homebrew maintainers and work with us on Workbrew, you know, one of the things I say is that, you know, when we're working on Workbrew, I'm your boss now, but when we work on Homebrew, I'm still not your boss, right? Like if you think I'm saying something and it's a bad idea, you tell me it's a bad idea, right? Like things don't change there. Cause I think that's how open source works the best. Yeah. And if anything, I was very inspired by early GitHub that behaved a lot like, you know, there was some minor dysfunctions, but, you know, it behaved a lot like working in an open source community in an open source project where there was not a focus on hierarchy and I've been here longer, I know more, whatever. But instead it was a kind of fairly open marketplace of these types of discussions. And I felt like that made the product a lot better. Yeah. And I think that's the case for Homebrew as well. Yeah.
One final question, if you just have a couple of minutes, just sort of more on the European side. You mentioned obviously where you are already. There are a handful of, I think, reasonably moderately well-known open source projects around the kind of Glasgow, Edinburgh area. What's it like in open source in Scotland, in that, I don't know if Scotland refers to that area in a particular way, but in that part of the world, what's it like?
Well, so in Scotland, we would call like the Glasgow Edinburgh area the central belt, because you almost like have a belt of almost continuous towns and transport and whatever between the two. But yeah, it's funny because, you know, it's such an international world nowadays that, I mean, those open source projects, the funny thing is you probably have a much better idea of what projects are in Edinburgh, Glasgow than I do. And half the time, you know, I'll be at some conference and chatting with someone and I'll have known their work on open source for a while. And then we're like, oh, turns out we live like 5 minutes down the road from each other. And I had no idea because, you know, I'm going by, you know, in a funny way, like, you know, GitHub.com feels more like the place I live when I'm doing open source than Edinburgh in Scotland. That just happens to be the place where my body inhabits meat space, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I must admit, we have been to Edinburgh and Glasgow, and I think I prefer Glasgow just because it's a bit bigger and a bit more lively. But
I'm glad you said that at the end of the conversation because I don't know if we can be friends now.
both are very nice, but you know, Edinburgh, I'm going to sound a bit odd here because I don't live there, but Edinburgh was like more tourist and Glasgow felt more like... It's also way bigger. I didn't realize how much bigger it was.
that's probably fair. I mean, Edinburgh's definitely more of a tourist city, but you know, I've lived in Edinburgh most of my life. I was raised here and grew up here and whatever. So unfortunately I'm bound by my geography that I can never admit that Glasgow is better for essentially anything except maybe live music.
And I'm going to use the American term just to make it easier for people to know what I'm talking about, but I'm a huge Scotch fan. So is there. Anyways.
Single malt whiskey.
Pretty much. There's actually a very nice bar, I remember, in Edinburgh that I took my friends to when we were passing through last year after a space side trip, actually. So, and I can never remember the name of it, but I know where it is. So good. Awesome. Well, Mike, keep things going because I know a lot of people rely on the project and probably a lot of listeners. So yeah, and good luck with Workbrew. And I look forward to seeing what these announcements may be that you alluded to. So awesome.
You will see.
Thank you very much.
Keeping it all a bit mysterious for now. Thanks, Chris. Have a good rest of your day.
And rather appropriately and excitingly, I can now see that these announcements did result in something. There is now a beta self-service tier for Workbrew. They've also changed the logo and the look a little bit. There is a free tier, a pro tier, and an enterprise tier. So things did eventuate into months. So sometimes it can pay to wait before you release something. That's going to be my justification and excuse. Anyway, news from me. Well, I have a couple of new videos up on YouTube, including a roundup of text editors and IDEs for macOS. Also, the first part of my new drumming video series. And there's some other things. I'm still undergoing a few bits of change. Sort of November is going to be where I launch a few new things and things will maybe get more interesting. I don't know who says. And I will also be on the road a little bit in November. I'm not doing quite as much as in September, but I'll be back at Web Summit. If any of you happen to be there, I always end up meeting a lot of people there. And I'll also be at an event in Cambridge and Lincoln, of all places in the UK. A private event, but if you happen to be around any of those places and want to have a chat, then do let me know. As always, much more over at christianchiller.com. I have been Christian Chiller. Thank you for joining me in the Tech Lounge and take care, everybody. So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Chiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianchiller.com.
thetechlounge.com, or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianscheller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.